Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to Laura Fox for another entertaining afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 8th of March. This is Game On, and I'm Shane Dawson. Coming up this evening, Johnny Sexton confirms he'll bow out at the highest level after next year's Rugby World Cup. In Gaelic football, Declan Bogue looks back on the mark outgoing Kilcoo manager Mickey Moran has had on the game, a true legend of the sport. In golf, we'll hear from Drumoreland Castle on their hosting of this year's Women's Irish Open. And in racing, it's episode 2 of our documentary series, Tiger Roll, The People's Horse. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Tuesday evening, wherever you are tuning in from. And I'm delighted to be in the company of Shelburne, former Raheny United and Women's National League icon of the game, Rebecca Cray. Rebecca, we'll be chatting very, very shortly, but let's just dive straight in to the news of the day. A couple of headlines, starting with Athletics. A squad of 19 athletes will form the Team Ireland contingent at the upcoming World Indoor Championships in Belgrade, Serbia. The event, which runs from the 18th to the 20th of March, will see Molly Scott, Phil Healy, Mark English, Israel Olatunde and Sarah Healy among the Irish representatives who will hope to carry recent strong form into the competition. You can see a full list of athletes on the RTÉ Sport website. In GAA, we've gone from Railway Cup to Club Finals, and now it will be the Hogan Cup and Croke Cup Finals that will be played at Croke Park on St Patrick's Day. But I suppose the big headline news, I've already mentioned it in the intro there, is indeed that Ireland are back in Six Nations action this weekend. They face England in Twickenham, but the main story to come out of today and the main story come out of Johnny Sexton speaking to the media is that the Ireland captain has extended his contract with the IRFU until after next year's World Cup, when then he will retire from the game. So big news there, and that is where we will start our programme. As I mentioned, Johnny Sexton was on media duties a bit earlier on.
The process only, like, there was initial talks, like, you know, a few months ago about whether I had the desire to keep going, and I said at the moment I do, but again, it was never going to be done till this stage of the season, because you just don't know. And again, if you picked up an injury or you think, you know, puts, you know, the majority of next season in doubt, so you've got to wait. I suppose at this age it's a lot different if you're mid-20s or whatever, but look, it was fine. It was, like I said, we sat down last week and we sorted it out in a couple of conversations. You know, there's the balance, isn't it, between making sure you're looked after, but also acknowledging that you're 36 and that there's risk that goes with that. But at the same time, you know, all you can do is go on what's in front of you. I've hoped to keep proving my worth, and that's all I can say, really. I'm just delighted to keep the dream going, as they say.
You said a couple of times in this conversation here, like, that you want to go out on the top, go out at the top. Have you decided yet, like, is this your last deal? Is the World Cup going to be retirement, or is that still an open book, so to speak?
Finish 2023 World Cup. So I'm delighted to be able to say it, delighted. I've been beating around the bush for 6 months, sort of always nervous about talking about the World Cup, you know, when you weren't guaranteed to be there. But, I just want to make the most of this last 18 months of my career. And like I said, want to go out at the top. And that's up to me now to work hard and get the body and mind in the best shape possible and attack the last, like I said, the last 18 months.
Just get back to Corky's point about the sacrifices that you're having to make and continue to do to get your body where it needs to be for weekends like this. When you don't have to make those sacrifices again, what's the food or the drink that you're looking forward to?
Look, it's balance, isn't it? Like, I wouldn't say, you know, you'd still find time in the routine to have the the odd beer, you know, with your brother or your friends and or your teammates, or a glass of wine. So you can still do that as a professional rugby player. I suppose you can probably just do it a little bit more often, which is a dangerous thing when you retire. I'll be honest. I'd say when I do retire, I'd say I'll miss everything about the game. It's an absolute dream, or you know, to do what I've done and to do it for so long, it's incredible. And I pinch myself, you know, every day. So just very grateful to keep it going. But I think when I hang up the boots, I'll be lost. I'll be like a lost puppy for the first while. But I'll find something else to throw myself into, I'm sure. Golf maybe.
They're the thoughts of Johnny Sexton, the big news today. Rebecca, before we get into our football chat, golf is what Johnny Sexton will look forward to, having a few more beers, a few glasses of wine. You have recently retired only last November from elite level football. What was the thing you were most looking forward to, being able to enjoy a bit more now?
Yeah, I suppose you kind of sacrifice a lot, you know, playing at a high level. You miss out on family parties, friends parties, you know, being able to just book flights and go off on holidays whenever you want. And I think so far this year I've been on 3 different flights away. So, like, you know, that's a huge difference. Things like I couldn't do really, or you kind of had to plan around a season. So, yeah, and I suppose, you know, you have your nights out as well on the weekends. You know, Fridays, usually we're locked in for training, prepping for games on the weekend. So, yeah, look, as he said, you do miss a lot of that routine and something you've been used to for so long. But, yeah, there is pros to it as well.
Yeah, certainly is. And we'll be getting into a deeper chat on the Women's National League in a few moments' time. But just before we do, I'm delighted to say I can remind our listeners there was a competition on yesterday. Our competition is on again. It is with thanks to Yoplait Ireland, the new official yogurt of the LGFA and proud sponsors of their higher education competition, whose finals take place this week. To celebrate their sponsorship, they've given us an amazing €1,000 sports voucher to give away at the end of this week to one lucky club to buy lots of cool kit and equipment. Plus, you could win yourself our daily prize of a €100 sports voucher and a delicious hamper full of everyone's Yoplait favourites. So, to be in with a chance to win, all you have to do is answer the following question. Which golfer became the first Irish winner on the Ladies Professional Golf Association Tour last month? So, to enter, just text your answer, your name and the name of your club to 51552. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for more details. So as I said, the question there, which golfer became the first Irish winner on the Ladies Professional Golf Association Tour last month? So I'll give you a few minutes to think about that, because we're going to turn our attention to association football with Rebecca Cray and indeed Mark Langdon in just a few moments' time.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on.
Football.
Yes, hello again. You're very welcome back to Game On. It is great to have your company as we turn our attention to association football in the company of former Women's National League player Rebecca Cray and Mark Langdon of the Racing Post. Rebecca, if I come to yourself first, the Women's National League kicked off last weekend. Victory for Shells against Bowes, 1-0. DLR were big winners over Treaty. Pemount, big winners over Sligo. Galway got an away victory in Cork, and Wexford got an away victory in Athlone. But I suppose let's start with Shells, because you are wearing a nice Save Talca Park t-shirt, very on brand for this conversation. Shelburne in Talca Park defeated Bowes 1-0. Captain Pearl Slattery scoring Shelburne's opening goal of the season for the third year in a row. I mean, there's no stopping her.
Literally, no. And obviously I had to wear the t-shirt that both of us being in Shell's head. But yeah, look, I call her the reliable, you know, the El Reliable or so. But Pearl, I don't think many realise, actually started out as a forward. You know, the both of us actually started out up in Temple Oak United when we were only kids, and she used to bang them in then. And thankfully, she's still doing that. And, you know, the third consecutive season that she has done that for Shells, yeah.
Absolutely. She was in great form on Saturday evening at the Save Talca Bar gig.
That's right. I heard all about it.
Telling more stories about her. Last season's obviously victory for Shells. Shells obviously going towards a European campaign and the victory last weekend. They've a tough fixture actually coming up this weekend. They're away to Wexford as well. So revenge might be on the cards there. DLR Waves, headline from that, Rebecca, 16-year-old striker Joy Ralph getting on the score sheet twice, becoming the club's youngest ever player and the youngest ever goal scorer. We've had many conversations in this show about kind of the young talent coming through. We see Ellen Malloy, etc., etc., and the young talent being brought to the national team as well. But this is just another example of elite level football showcasing some excellent, excellent young players.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I've heard a lot about Joy Ralph in pre-season and the end of last season. I know she played under-17s and you know, coming through that pathway has obviously opened up you know, the pathway into the senior team for her. And look, I'm obviously delighted for the young talent coming through, and obviously she is very, very exciting talent and one to watch out for, and obviously she's only on 20 minutes I think and managed to get two goals, which is, I think it's unheard of, you know, in the National League up until now.
Absolutely. DLR are away to Sligo Rovers, who played their first ever match in the Women's National League. They went down 6-0 to Piemont. Dora Gorman with, I suppose, early contender for goal this season, and yeah, business as usual with Anya O'Gorman and Stephanie Roach. We talk about Pearl Slattery and the longevity, but two great players in Anya and Stephanie. But listen, Piemont, obviously big winners. They're going well. They'll be up against it this coming weekend. They're away in Galway. But great to see Sligo, and it's great to see the expansion of the women's game across the country.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, I think it was lacking a Western team since Castlebar Celtic dropped out of the National League, and it's great to have them in now. Look, it is going to be a tough maybe season for them. It's going to be a learning kind of curve for them, but I think they're going to grow year on year, and again, like, going back to your first game is against Piemont, you know, it's always going to be a hard task, and you have the likes of Anya and Steph, business as usual, as you said. And yeah, look, it is great to have them in their 10 team league as well, which no one gets a break this season.
Yeah, absolutely, it is great. And I suppose we saw Bowes coming into the league, and this year they might be able to bridge that gap to your Shelburnes, your Wexfords, your Piemonts, and indeed Galway. Galway were big winners. Savannah McCarthy was unbelievable again, and Wexford as well, a fantastic second half comeback by Wexford, saw them take all 3 points in a Hereford fought win against Athlone. Athlone have signed a few good players as well, and again, we talk about the geographical spread. We have nice, great to see Galway and Sligo out west, Athlone as well. Hopefully we might see a few teams up further north in the coming years, who knows. But again, as I say, you know, Athlone, it's brilliant to see, but Wexford and Galway, they'll be, I hate the cliche of thereabouts, but they're going to be extremely successful, no doubt, this year again.
Yeah, most definitely. Galway have always been a very tough outfit, especially away from home. You know, as you said, Savannah again, proving how good she is. But, you know, looking at Lone, there's such a tight score, and they were winning, I think they were winning 1-0 up until 15 minutes to go, and obviously Wexford and their never say die attitude came back and obviously got the win. But it's going to be completely wide open this season. It's going to be one that I think a lot of people will be excited to watch, for the neutrals anyway. But yeah, really, really hard to call so early on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably going to be one of the, well, hopefully going to be one of the most competitive leagues that we've seen in quite some time, both in the league and in the cup. And indeed, it'll be interesting to see how Shells get on chasing European football as well in Talca Park, which is great to see. If I invite and welcome Mark Langdon into the conversation, Mark Langdon of the Racing Post, and we turn our attention from Women's National League football to the English Premier League. And before we go to preview mode, we're sticking with reviewing Spurs 5, Everton 0. Mark, Matt Doherty, very good. Seamus Coleman, not so good. Harry Kane's goals were his 175th and 176th in the Premier League, taking him 6th in the competition's all-time list, above ex-Arsenal striker Thierry Henry, and only one behind former Chelsea midfielder Frank Lampard, who of course was in the opposition dugout. So plenty of stories coming out of the match last night.
Yeah, no, I think sort of Doherty's renaissance really in recent weeks has been It's been very eye-catching as far as Tottenham's performances have gone. He played a part, even in that game against Man City, when he came on as a pretty late substitute. He was involved in the winning goal, made a very good run that opened up the space for Kulusevski to cross to Harry Kane. Of course, got the goal against Leeds. And then he was excellent last night against Everton, involved in most of the good things that Tottenham put together. And having sort of searched high and low for a right wing back that you know, Conte spent most of January looking for somebody, maybe the answer was, very much at the club already. Obviously, when Mourinho wanted to play the back four, that didn't really suit Doherty's, sort of strengths, really. Conte very much wants to play with the wing backs, and he wants them to play very high. He wants them to be a goal threat. So maybe there is a sort of second chance there, really, because it did look like he'd be leaving the club. I think as far as Everton were concerned, I mean, that was absolutely atrocious performance from them defensively. I mean, Coleman got picked out, for being at fault maybe for one of the goals, but I don't think he was alone, really. Collectively, just a horrendous performance from Everton. The two centre-backs, Keane and Holgate, were as bad as anybody. And, you know, if people felt like Everton were too good to go down, I think the evidence of that game suggests otherwise. They're thankful. I think they've got a lot of their remaining matches at Goodison, because away from home, it's just been sort of terrible performance after terrible performance, whether Rafa Benitez is in charge or Frank Lampard.
Yeah, you used the phrase absolutely atrocious. I was doing up my notes earlier and I just put down the word incompetent. Maybe I was being too polite and too generous on Frank Lampard. But listen, you mentioned it there. Like, I mean, Everton were last relegated from the top flight in 1951. They've had two last day escapes back in the 90s, 94 and 98. And they'll probably be bracing themselves for another cliffhanger this season. But do they have the fight? Do they have, they have the quality of players there, but do they have the fight? Do they have the bottle to see this out?
I think their best hope is probably that there's sort of just three worse teams rather than them being good enough, if you like, to sort of survive. Burnley have been the one team that out of those in the bottom three that you think maybe are showing. There's no doubt that Burnley have got the fight and character and the sort of will to really push, any team that kind of gets with close to them to sort of, because you know that Sean Dyche's team will never give up. You can't say that about Everton, who played pretty well, I suppose, against Manchester City. But I saw their game before the Tottenham one at Southampton when they lost 2-0. And I think they were just as bad then as what they were when they lost 5 to Spurs. It was only really wasteful finishing. And then I look at that team and I said it myself, people saying too good to go down. But really, outside of Richarlison, who I think is an excellent player when he kind of fancies it, I mean, who else is there? Dominic Calvert-Lewin doesn't look fit. I think he's been rushed back from injury. Pickford is making a lot of mistakes. We've spoken about how bad the defence is. Alan can't really get around the pitch like he used to a few years ago for Napoli. So you're then looking around and you're asking maybe Decore, who I think is probably better than he showed last night. Van der Beek would be another one that you'd be hoping could step up. But I have to say, with Van der Beek, there was a lot of Manchester United fans calling for him to start for them. And whenever he was given the opportunity, I never really felt like he kind of put any kind of performance together that suggested he should have been in that United starting 11. And it was kind of, the more he got left out, the better he got, and the more that people were talking about him. He was another one that was completely anonymous. They bought Dele Alli, who wants to play in the same position as Van der Beek. So you sort of question the judgment of the transfers. And I think they definitely are in the relegation fight. They haven't shown that kind of desire and hunger that you need to get out of it. Maybe that comes in some of them games at Goodison, coming up, because there'll be easier games, won't there, than, Tottenham away. That is a difficult match and, you can lose that game. But I think it's unacceptable the way that they lost it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a total and utter capitulation last night. Staying on Merseyside, but moving across the city, Rebecca, from Everton to Liverpool. Champions League this evening, Liverpool 2 up on aggregate from the first leg. I mean, you were at the League Cup final. You were over in Anfield last weekend as well. They're unbeaten in 2022. They have the League Cup trophy now. The quadruple is still on. I mean, 6 points behind City with a game in hand, and they play City in April 10th, I think it is. Now looking to become the first English team to win their first 8 Champions League games. The match is in Anfield tonight. I mean, is this a no-brainer?
You could say that, but I think a 2-0 lead, I think it's one of the most overturned scorelines in football history, you know, the kind of way. So look, they're going to have to negate the Inter attack early, you know, obviously defend well early on, and then look, we can always break and really good on the break, you know. I'd like to hope that Trent is going to be a bit more solid than he was in the final when I seen him. I know he did play a bit better and obviously got man of the match in the West Ham game. So yeah, look, he can show what he can do going forward. It's just that defensive mind sometimes kind of lacks. So yeah, look, I'd like to hope that Liverpool will see it out, and obviously go on to the next stage. But you just never know in this competition.
Yeah, you mentioned Trent Alexander-Arnold there. You would have seen him live at the weekend. It was his 11th assist at the weekend. I mean, for an alleged defender, and I use that considering he can be a bit suspect yeah. when he is defending, but he's created 71 chances now in the Premier League. That's second in the whole league, only 4 behind Bruno. And I suppose you mentioned trying to quell Inter's attack. They got a 5-0 win over Salernitana in the Serie A last weekend. Granted, their opposition were bottom of the league. They failed to score in the last previous 4 as well. So today is about, this evening, I suppose, Liverpool will want to really put down an impactful performance of, yes, we're through to the next round. Yes, we've got a record-breaking run in the Champions League as well. But going forward now, it's all about kind of keeping that momentum.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, it has to be a game by game, as the cliche goes. You know, I know I mentioned Trent, and I think in the first game against Inter, Perisic gave him a bit of hassle, you know, as a wing back down the left side. So I think he's back from injury as well tonight. So look, it's one of them that they're going to have to see out. You know, it's kind of take tonight and see how the next one goes after that. I'd be hopeful, obviously, as a fan, that look, we can go and win it, and I'd love to see us do the quadruple, but you just don't want to get your hopes up, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, time will tell. Mark, also this evening, Bayern Munich versus Salzburg. The first leg finished 1-1 in Austria last month, with Salzburg leading for most of the match, which I think took a lot of people by surprise, before Kingsley Coman struck a 90th minute equaliser. So all to play for, and I don't know, from a neutral point of view, probably the pick of the two to watch from a neutral perspective, a fan of just association football?
Yeah, I think in terms of sort of high-scoring games and goals, I think probably there's likely to be more in that game, you know, between Bayern Munich and Salzburg. Salzburg are a very fun team to watch. They do like to, you know, got a lot of pace on the counter-attack. Adeyemi, who's been heavily linked with Borussia Dortmund, that their forward, who's kind of stepped up and replaced Erling Haaland. He used to play for Bayern Munich, was let go of there as a youngster, has since forced his way into the German national team. I think, you know, a big occasion for him and his sort of young colleagues there, a very exuberant sort of team, and that they will keep going forward. That's usually ends in defeat against somebody like Bayern Munich because of the quality that they've got, you know, going forward themselves. So I think it'll be a really fun game. I would be very surprised, I mean, it goes without saying really, if Bayern and Liverpool don't progress. But certainly, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Salzburg can at least score first and try to put a bit of pressure on Bayern, because I don't think they'll be scared by the occasion. Everything we've seen from them in the last few years, I mean, that they played at Anfield a couple of years ago and, you know, scored a lot of goals in that game. And yeah, they will just keep coming forward, and Bayern can concede goals, but it could end up something crazy, you know, like a 4-2 or something like that. I do think it'll be a high-scoring game, and you know, Bayern eventually to progress, and, you know, presumably alongside Liverpool as well.
Yeah, hopefully both will be high-scoring affairs and plenty of entertainment for the neutral viewer. Mark Langdon, Rebecca Cray, thank you both very, very much. We'll have a lot more on football tomorrow, and we'll also have Bernie Jackman on rugby as well, in case anyone thinks that we're just brushing over the headline news of the day. But an action-packed show continues in a few moments' time. We'll have Declan Bogue on the line talking all things GAA regards Mickey Moran and the retirement of one of the true greats of the game.
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
hello once again. It's great to have your company here on Game On this Tuesday evening as we turn our attention to Gaelic football. And I'm delighted to welcome to the show Declan Bogue, GAA writer. Declan, headline news from today is, of course, Mickey Moran, who has been operating in top-level football for half a century, has stepped down from his position as Kilcoo Bainisteoir just 3 weeks after leading the Down champions to the All-Ireland Club Senior Football Championship title. And the 69-year-old has reportedly signalled his intention to call it a day. Declan, the word legend gets thrown about, but I think it's very apt when we're talking about Mickey Moran.
That's a fair point, Shane. People are, in general, enthralled by him. And also, since he, for the last decade, you got to remember that he stepped down from the Leitrim job in 2011, and there was a little bit of ill health. And essentially, then at that point, he just made a decision that he didn't want to actually deal with the media from then on. That grants him a certain mystique, I suppose, and it means that he's never doing the talking, but other people are then inevitably doing all the talking for him. And so in that situation, what you do is you go to the people around him and ask, well, what is Mickey Moran like, or what does Mickey Moran do? And every article ends up being absolutely glowing because he has an unbelievable effect on young men. And for a fella who turns 70 next month, like, he has some gift. And he essentially, I suppose, what happened in the All-Ireland final against Kilmacud, he saw that it's the top of the mountain. And where is there else to go, really? Like, so, you know, it's a nice thing for him to be able to step off at this stage of his life, having done it all, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I was doing a bit of reading earlier and I loved the opening paragraph from yourself, actually, in the Belfast Telegraph not too long ago, where you wrote, the longer you spend in this gig observing, analysing and watching sport, you come to realise that the most overrated quality for management is that of youth. And yet the prospect of a young manager continues to have a giddy effect on sports fans everywhere. You only have to look at some Everton fans sucking on the nitrous oxide that is the prospect of grossly inexperienced 36-year-old Wayne Rooney taking over as manager to get a sense of that, which is extremely appropriate considering Everton's collapse last night. But listen, I mean, Seamus O'Hanlon was speaking to RT Sport. He's club secretary in Kilcoo, and he mentioned that the players gave him a guard of honour last night going into the changing rooms when he mentioned that he was stepping away. So it does show the regard, the high regard that he was held in. His name is forever going to be held in a very high regard in Kilcoo, but also across the country. I mean, you've spoken to Emlyn Mulligan in the past, Billy Joe Paddy. I mean, he's managed at an inter-county level as well, and wherever he goes, as Seamus O'Hanlon said, he was the conductor of the orchestra, and that's what he was, regardless of the club or county he was present at.
And the amazing thing about it is it's such a light touch, and such a there's so many demonstrative guys on the line in the game, and you know, without naming names, and we all know them, you see them popping up in different counties all the time, and they are the people who are constantly sent from the line, constantly seeking the attention. Mickey Moran did nothing of that, and yet, you know, everywhere he goes he leaves complete disciples. I mean, this is a guy who won, he was 36 when he managed OMA in 1988 to a Drone Championship. That's not simple. To win the Drone Championship is not simple. He was the coach of Derry when they won the All-Ireland title. He was involved then with Mayo, obviously, got them to the All-Ireland final. He got Donegal to a certain point, but he just couldn't get past that tracksuit ravers phase, as Eamon McGee called it. He was in Leitrim. They haven't won a game in Connacht, bar games against New York and London, since he left, and that was in 2010. He fetched up in Slotnail. He won countless Derry titles, Ulster titles, reached an All-Ireland club final, won 3 Down titles, 2 Ulster clubs. Obviously, there wasn't an Ulster club in COVID. Won the All-Ireland. I mean, and anyone that you talk to, they all kind of say the same thing, as it's his calmness, it's his remove from things, like, it's his ability to analyse, dissect and take his time and then deliver whatever he needs to. But more than that, the person who is 28 in the panel, 31 in the panel, who hasn't got a chance of playing in any game really, will say the same thing about him as the guy who is the captain or lifting the trophies. Like, he leaves a mark on young men. And I think the secret is, no secret at all, and I think this is where the GAA actually need to be sharp and cute. They could get Mickey Moore and give him some kind of a role as a coaching master, or else, you know, do a series of podcasts with him about elements of coaching and about how to treat people. And I think that that would go an awful long way. Well, that'll happen now. They're not really given to that kind of foresight. They'll probably invite him onto a coaching conference, which would mean addressing a room of peers, and Mickey just wouldn't go in for that kind of thing. But, you know, there's an awful lot of him that could be used as a resource from here on in.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the tracksuit ravers mantra. But on a more serious note, Declan, I suppose it's that one-on-one management and the relationships that he built up, both with players. But, I mean, you look at Ollie Cummins, that kind of went with him from counties to different clubs as well. And you mentioned he was a coach to Eamon Coleman for the Derry's sole All-Ireland triumph in 93. So he had such a vast kind of array of roles, but managed to have those, I suppose, personal relationships, which is really, really impactful, permanently impactful as well. And you talk about kind of even going up and lifting the cup. I mean, it's not many managers that would be ushered up by the players to lift the cup with them.
That's just an astonishing thing. I've never seen that happen. I've never seen a group of young men as attached to their manager as Kilcoo were. And these are guys who are long in the tooth. Like, Conor Laverty's 36. Aidan Brannigan's the same age. These guys play county football. Laverty was playing back in 05, 04 county football almost 20 years ago for Down. And, you know, you think that I've heard it all and seen it all with various managers. Like, Paul McIver is very highly rated. Jim McCorry sort of started that ball rolling in Kilcoo. And then you had Wee James. Like, Laverty was in the panel that reached the All-Ireland final, as was Aidan Brannigan. The amount of exposure these guys had to top-class coaching, Paddy Talley, Brian McIver, they all, you know, fell in within the remit of these players. And yet, they had a devotion, a pure devotion to Mickey Moore. And, look, I can't really put any other value on it other than he seems to value people like himself and John Morrison, who is a fantastic man. Like, in early 2019, John passed away. And, like, over the course of the year, he brought in his son Patrick Morrison as a goalkeeping coach, former Armagh goalie. So he was helping out with Kilcoo. And, you know, on the third anniversary of his father's death, they won the All-Ireland with Kilcoo together, and he had a Morrison in the backroom team. And there's little sort of, well, that is pure coincidence, like, but there's little vignettes of that which kind of show you that, you know, he's always been out there and always looking after people around him too.
Yeah, absolutely. A leader, a legend, a magician, one of the greats of our game. And it's been, I suppose, a privilege from a personal viewpoint to be able to see him manage and get to the pinnacle of the game as well. So hopefully Mickey Moran does enjoy his retirement.
Game on.
Golf.
But it is now time to turn our attention to golf, and I'm delighted to welcome Eamon O'Donnell on the line, who is the Director of Golf at Drumorland Castle. Obviously, Drumorland Castle has recently announced the return of the Irish Women's Open that will be staged on its stunning 450-acre estate, 18-hole championship course from the 22nd to the 25th of September this year. The return of the Ladies European Tour event will be the first time women's professional golf will be played in Ireland since 2012. Eamon, you're very welcome along to the show. Great news that the European Tour is returning to Ireland. I mean, what was involved in just getting this deal over the line?
Thank you very much, Ian. Yeah, look, I suppose everyone at Drumorland, we're thrilled to be in a position to actually announce the event and to hold it. I suppose the process, it would have begun about 20 months ago, where we sat down ourselves at Drumorland, came up with a kind of a vision to say, what can we do? And we spoke then with the LET, Sports Ireland, government. And finally, we kind of got ourselves to this position where we're now delighted to say that the Women's Irish Open is coming back on schedule.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Don't we all agree with those sentiments? It is brilliant to see. The course and accompanying practice facilities currently undergoing a €2 million upgrade. So what should we expect from the venue? And I suppose how challenging is the course as well?
Yeah, I suppose we're very lucky that our managing director and our owners here are very supportive of the initiatives that we've kind of started with the golf, but also, in giving us the tools, I suppose, to be able to host this event. As you say, we're currently investing $2 million into the golf course and the facilities. This will see a Ron Kirby JB Carr designed 18-hole golf course. We're just enhancing the product, the playability. We're doing an awful lot of work upgrading the bunkers, renovation, addition of new tee boxes. It's effectively what we're trying to do is future-proof the golf course for the next 20 years. And, part of that is the sustainability of it. Everything is going green at the moment, so we need to be at the forefront of that. And that's kind of where the $2 million investment is coming in.
Absolutely. And this will showcase the sport for young girls and indeed young boys in Ireland. How beneficial will that exposure be to growing the women's game here as well? Because, I mean, hopefully it is a chance to see Leona Maguire. I'm not sure if she's fully committed, but to get to see her live in action.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. It's huge for women's sport. Effectively, this has been an event that hasn't been held in 10 years. It's very, that's kind of one of the big important factors for us in actually trying to host the event was, we want to make sure that the event is there for the next 20 years. It's not a question of a one-hit wonder. We're working with our partners from Golf Ireland and the LEC and Sports Ireland to ensure the longevity of the event. And, effectively what we want to do is put on, a festival of sport around the event. Everyone says, who wants to be the next Rory or the next Leona? We see, by us giving an actual given a platform for the future sports stars, women golfers, it's a massive coup for us to be hosting it. We feel it's us giving the ladies the rightful platform to be able to show their skills. We are very lucky in this country to see the development of women's golf, especially, Leona, Stephanie, Olivia McCaffrey. There's incredible talent in Ireland, and we're just delighted to be able to showcase it.
Absolutely. It is great to see the Women's Irish Open back in Ireland. Eamon O'Donnell from Drumorland Castle, thank you very much for joining us. It is going to be great for Drumorland Castle and indeed for County Clare and indeed for the promotion of the women's game. We're motoring along nicely this evening. A little bit earlier on, I did ask a question and it was golf related, actually. And that question was indeed, which golfer became the first Irish winner on the Ladies Professional Golf Association Tour last month? And our competition winner today is Lindsay O'Shea from Churchill GEA Club in Kerry. Congratulations, Lindsay. You get a €100 voucher for your club and lots of Yoplait goodies, I should say. And indeed, you'll be entered into Friday's draw for that amazing €1,000 sports voucher. Before we do go, I did say get your text in at 51552 and Rebecca Cray still joins me live in studio. Just before we wrap up, I do have a text in here from Chloe Mustaki, Rebecca, who says, Rebecca is an absolute gem within the female football community in Ireland. Her contribution and dedication to the club has been astounding, something I've rarely come across with other teams, always putting the collective ahead of herself. She'll be greatly missed in seasons to come. So there you have it, Rebecca.
A former teammate.
Yeah. Rebecca, thank you very much, and indeed thank you very much to all our contributors this evening. That is all we have time for the live part of Game On.